Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues. I regret saying hey everybody already. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
One of us on top of the world, a vision of health.
I just sound very sexy now.
And I'm looking forward to no high-pitched Siobhan laughs,
I think. I can't laugh. I'll cough. Fantastic. I'll cough and I'll throw up. I'm sorry.
So you can give your ears a break this episode. The limit is on my editing software. We'll have a holiday for this episode. Hey, what's going on? Every single episode of Serious Issues. We read all the comics that came out last week, or most of them. I'll let you know which the ones you should be reading too. Mm-hmm. All the comics that we talk about on the show, we get from the very good people at King's Comics, a place that employs both myself and Siobhan. Siobhan Hello. In a far more official capacity than myself.
I'm the marketing manager.
I'm just the beloved guy.
Yep.
That's what it says.
That's the official title.
Beloved guy.
Beloved guy.
all the comics come from Kings, which you can find for the time being.
Yes.
At 310 Pitt Street, mm-hmm. Sydney. I feel like I only just learnt that address.
Yeah, I know. And now you've got to forget it.
Forget it.
Forever.
Yeah, but we're, Kings is moving.
Yes.
But you'll always be able to find Kings Comics at kingscomics.com, where you can find every single comic that we talk about on the episode, plus incredible bargains and blasts from the pasts.
Yes. It's good shit being uploaded from the warehouse all the time.
If you love comics, head over there. If you love comics, well, let me tell you, you found the right podcast.
Absolutely. Because if you don't love comics, what the fuck are you doing here?
We at the very least like them. Depending on the week and how many we decide to force upon our brains. This week, a moderately good amount. I think I read within the 20s. As long as I keep it in the 20s, as soon as you go over 30, when I go 30, I start developing a twitch.
Yeah.
Over 40, and I'm like, fuck comics. This is the worst medium. What were they thinking?
And if I read like 20 or so singles, like new singles, I still have time to like read something else that I actually enjoy.
Like we said, we like comics. We start every episode of Serious Issues by going in to First Things First. But before I do that, I just want to let everybody know at the top of the episode that if you would want to support the show and in reward for supporting the show, get prizes. Prizes Ooh. In the form of bonus episodes that we've recorded and uploaded to our Patreon. We have a Patreon page, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. The most recent bonus episode we recorded on there was a spoiler cast for the excellent series Saga by mm-hmm. Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. A whole hour of Saga discussion where we go full into spoilers. I go through every single death in the series and we talk about how that affected us emotionally.
Doesn't that sound fun?
It was really fun.
It was fun.
I cried.
It was really
It was a beautiful experience.
He's a big baby.
The month before that, we did a Kill or Be Killed podcast mm-hmm. by another writer whose name is Ed Brubaker.
I was going to say Brian.
Brian Brubaker. Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips and Elizabeth Breitweiser did that incredible crime series, which also wrapped up recently. We did a spoiler class about that too. You can find them both and many other bonus episodes over at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. And as soon as Siobhan gets her voice back and it can do more than one episode a week, we'll do a what the other things we've been reading. Because while I've not read that many things, Siobhan has read tons of things.
I don't know why.
That's great. I can't That's wait to good. Hear get caught up on all the things that I should have been reading instead of all these goddamn singles.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it.
First Things First is the name of our opening segment of every single episode, where we review all the new number one issues that came out last week. And we go through publisher by publisher, starting with DC, or in this case, their new imprint, Jinx World.
I missed this.
Oh, you said last week.
I know.
Yes, please.
Okay, do you know what happened this week? Is that I was too sick to come into work on Thursday and Friday. I like slept all day Thursday, Friday. And the lovely Nate, my lovely boyfriend Nate, had to come in and pick up the
canonically
comics for
lovely
me.
Nate.
So I got the most insane package of comics. He got me like 100 comics. I had to be like, I don't read 60% of these, and he definitely missed things.
That's an enormous bag.
Yeah, yeah. And then I had to fucking bring them all back in.
This
today
is
on
you though, because for 2 years I have emailed in advance to Jim from Kings. These are the books that I would like to read this week.
Fair point.
You could also say, hey, Jim, I want these as well.
No.
I could just say times two on it.
No,
but
way.
You have to go, you're so old school.
Oh, that's true. Just do times two.
I see. Yeah. Do you want me to do that? Jim, can we times two from now on?
No, because then I'll have to read all the dumb ones that you read that I don't read.
Yeah, that's
times two the work for me. Yeah, but we wouldn't want to make Jim do any work.
Well, anyway, the first comic we're going to talk about in First Things First is, or I'm going to talk about.
All right, tell me about it.
I purposely picked this one because if I went with Marvel, haven't read that one either. Because I got here with you and the first thing I saw was you saying, I'm not reading this.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
Pearl is the name of a new series by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gaydos, the creators of Jessica Jones, a.k.a. Alias. Pearl is the first series from Jinx World, which is... Has it always been... Jim, has Jinx World existed as an imprint elsewhere before now? Or Brian Bendis just put out his comics somewhere else? Icon. Yeah, so he's been doing Icon. He released his comics through Icon years ago, then through Image. Now it's all under DC. Jinx World is now a DC imprint. So we have Pearl, which is a comic about a girl with a very, very expensive tattoo who, while out on the town, someone recognizes the tattoo as an Iriguchi original.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
You know, he's clearly a man of tattoo taste if he's able to pick that. He knows that what she has on her arm is special. It's a spider tattoo, and she knows that guy is special for being able to pick that. Then suddenly, crime happens.
Whoa!
Organized crime.
Oh my goodness!
And it turns out that the girl with the tattoo has links to the underworld, the crime underworld, and after a gang fight. She finds herself in the middle of a gang fight, which goes awry. She is tasked with having to kill everyone involved, which may or may not include the boy who picked
liked
her tattoo.
It's
a simple concept that's told, like, you know how you're like, oh, these recent Superman issues aren't particularly Bendis-y.
Mm.
He saved up all that Bendis-y shit and crammed it into this book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there is enough in these pages to make me curious to see where this series goes. But, Siobhan, even though maybe my incredible description was not enough to win you over to potentially reading this, what is great about this is that without telling anybody, a surprise in the back matter is, did you know this little tidbit that Brian Bendis actually wrote a Batman story before he signed exclusivity to Marvel? It's very, very hard to get your hands on. He did it in the issue 21 of the Batman Chronicles.
Cool.
And I knew about this, but I've never read it. In fact, I hosted a Batman trivia night at my nightclub a few years ago.
And
one of the questions, I lost.
I came second.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's still losing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I knew
the guy who won. He's a piece of shit. Yes.
Wow. Possibly a listener too?
I don't know. Don't care.
One of the questions was, which of these writers has never written a Batman book before? And the one that I thought everyone, like I knew everyone would choose, I put Brian Bendis in there, knowing that he had written this very obscure book. But the correct answer was actually Jonathan Hickman. But anyway, Batman has been written by Bendis in the past, featuring art by Michael Gaydos as well, who's the artist on this book.
I like that art so much more than what he's doing now.
I totally agree with you.
That's so cool.
Excellently like penciled black and white art.
Gorgeous.
The whole thing is a tribute to Citizen Kane. It's called Citizen Wayne.
Yes, please.
In which Bruce Wayne's dying words are Rosebud and reporter.
That's too much of a tribute.
Reporter Clark Kent is trying to get to the bottom of what Rosebud is. And he interviews Alfred and Dick Grayson and Selina Kyle and the Joker in the hope to try and find out what it is. Do you want to know what Rosebud turns out to be?
What does it turn out to be?
Rosebud is the gun that killed his parents. It was etched into the side of the gun.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, but it's a pretty good little story.
Yeah, sure. Like, I mean, a retelling of someone else's story, but not as good.
No, no, but here's the thing. So every winter, before he had lots of money, Bruce used to go to the snow and would slide down the slopes of snow on the gun, which is called Rosebud. Pearl, a really, really cool little surprise having that little Batman strip, which I enjoyed a lot more than the actual story itself, but I will give another issue of this a shot.
Okay.
Because I generally do like Bendis's kind of creator-owned stuff. Hmm. There is a little bit of like edgy for edgy sake in his dialogue. Especially when he's writing women.
I know. I get a little bit tired of his female characters. They're just so relentlessly tough.
The main character is not, I think you might enjoy. It's not just like tough girl Jessica Jones or the girl from Powers or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love whiskey and guns and swearing.
So that's
shitting in toilets.
That's right. As opposed to where do you do your majority of your shitting?
In the sink, like normal people. Sorry.
That's why you're sick.
I'm so tired.
That's why you're sick, Siobhan. All that sink shitting. So let's talk about Image this week put out a number one called Crowded, which is written by Christopher Sabella, who we recently enjoyed a new series he started over at Image, Shanghai Red.
Yes.
He wrote that one. But here he is joined by creators Roe Stein, Ted Brandt, Triona Farrell, and Cardinal Ray.
Oh, good name, Cardinal Ray.
Yeah, very good. Good lettering as well, Cardinal Ray. So this book is a kind of hard and fast crime comedy caper.
Yes.
In which you can, much like very, very intelligent people, choose to support creators they like by signing up to their Patreon.
You know what? The Patreon money actually saved my life this week.
Oh, really?
Because I was too sick to move, and so I paid for Uber Eats to bring chicken soup to my house.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Genuinely. That's all I ate that day. Being sick is the worst.
But in this world that The Crowded is set in, you can, if enough people back, I guess it's more comparable to like Kickstarter, everyone can back like a hit to be taken out on someone.
That's a pretty funny idea.
Yeah, a really, really clever concept. And basically a girl who thinks herself very innocent hires someone who is while sloppy at his or her job. I couldn't tell
her.
Yeah. Her job is, everyone who hires her to keep them safe lives to give her a bad rating afterwards.
Yes.
So, while this was a little too fast and like joke packed and not all the jokes hit, I actually really enjoyed this enough to definitely keep reading it.
Yeah. I was like, okay, you're very clever. I see what you're doing here. But it was actually pretty fun and the characters are pretty well rounded. And the art's like lovely and very dynamic and it suits the fast paced storytelling.
Yeah. So now we're like, I'm like two for two recently of, reading these new Christopher Sabella books, having already thought myself as not a fan of his work in general. And I like his more recent books. So
yeah, absolutely. At least the first issue.
Yeah, definitely. So who knows how long we stick on it. But if you like the idea of a kind of like a crime comedy with tons of jokes and two pretty funny main characters that are very different and a cute little dog, Chihuahua.
Cute little dog.
Little dog. Give Crowded a shot at the Image at the moment. Marvel put out three number ones this week, and I bet you, Siobhan, only read one of them.
I read two. You just didn't read one of them.
Oh, wow. So. Four number ones this week. God damn. So, all right. Well, let's talk about Edge of Spider-Geddon. Edge of Spider-Geddon is another series similar to the Edge of Venomverse books that we got last year.
Yeah. I would say it has more in common with the Spider-Verse.
Do we get Edge of Spider-Verse as well?
Yeah,
so I guess, okay, sure. All right. So I wasn't reading all those because we didn't have the podcast then, I don't think.
I think we did.
Oh, fuck.
Anyway, I think you did read them. Shit. It doesn't matter.
I just remember the Edge of Venomverse being these fun little one-shots.
Yes.
Written by different creators featuring like alternate versions of Venom throughout the multiverse. And
yes.
Cy Spurrier did a great one of Ghost Rider Venom.
Yeah, that was good.
That was a really good issue. And now we're getting that again with Edge of Spider-Geddon. And we have, I guess we're getting an event soon called Spider-Geddon, which seems to be a sequel to Spider-Verse, I guess.
Yep.
In which all the multiverse of spiders get together to not die together or something.
I just like these more than I like. I look at the concept and I'm like, oh, shut up, Marvel Comics, I hate you. But then I like them. They're good.
Yeah, so this
They're
is
silly.
This one is a little one shot featuring Spider-Punk.
Yes, please.
Is he a character that already existed?
He was a character that showed up in the Spider-Verse books.
Okay, sure. All right, so we're getting like kind of more fleshed out. What's that?
Is his name Hobie?
Hobie, yeah. Hobart Hobie Brown.
Good name.
Oh, there you go. You're right. Here he is. He was right. He defeated Norman Osborn, the oppressive U.S. president of Earth 138, before he was handpicked by Superior Spider-Man to join his spider army opposing the Inheritors.
Good fun. He's the anarchic Spider-Man. Good. I like it.
But so basically he's visited by Kang in this early on in this one shot. And Kang has come back to let him know that he is in violation of the copyright that he has taken out on his likeness as Spider-Punk many years into the future.
And he attacks him with lots of tiny, like, Spider-Punk sumsums.
Yeah.
That was my favorite bit, where they're like all going, fight chibi, the power.
Chibi Spider-Punks. And so Spider-Punk enlists the help of Captain Anarchy, who is
Anarchist Captain America, obviously.
Yep, obviously, yep.
Great. God, I love this shit. So funny.
And Captain Anarchy is very upset that that Kang hasn't come after him, because he figures out that he isn't a popular hero in the future. And Spider-Punk learns that the only reason he's popular is because, like so many other idolized young people, they died when they were young. So in order to save himself from being killed, he uploads a mixtape to the Bruce Banner of this universe, which turns him into a Hulk hunk. A Hulk punk.
Yeah, called Atom Bomb.
Atom Bomb.
Come on, guys. What more do you fucking want?
It's really, really fun. Excellent. So I didn't even say who it was written. It was written by Jed McKay, who I'm not familiar with at all, but I am familiar with the pencil and inker, Gerardo Sandoval, and colorist Brian Reber.
Sandoval work?
He did some Venom stuff last year, I think. Sure he's done plenty of other things. But yeah, I really enjoy it. It reminds me a little bit of like a more 90s pencilier kind of Ron Wimbley.
Yep, for sure.
Throughout the book.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just fun. Ron Wimbley
is selling his pages from the She-Hulk issues that he did.
Really?
Yeah. For like $400 each. So affordable. Guys, check him out.
You gonna get one?
No.
And you gotta get that kind of friends discount?
No. We're always like, hey, discount. And he's like, haha, no.
No, this is how, I live.
Anyway, you should check that out, guys, because his page is amazing. But I really like this. It's very silly. The next issue has that like Japanese mech spider girl.
Yeah. Yes, please. And then Jason Latour has done one soon. I see he teased on his Instagram, which is Spider Ben, which is Uncle Ben as Spider-Man.
Good.
You know, it's like a fun little concept, and it's only one issue. And
exactly.
It's the way to do this kind of story.
It just exists like by itself, and it's silly, and it's just good.
And then the actual event happens, and you're like, oh, I like those weird one-shots way more.
Yeah. I don't want it to be serious.
Yeah, exactly. So go give The Edge of Spider-Geddon number one a shot. I imagine if you like fun little Elseworlds versions of your favorite super spider hero, go check this one out.
Absolutely.
So Extermination is the name of the big new X-Men epic, which has been written by Ed Brisson with art by Pepe Larraz and colors by Marte Gracia. You love his name.
Just a good name.
It's a great name. He just is the Pepe part.
Yeah.
This is a book about the original X team.
Oh, God.
Finally dying. So
good.
At the start of his X-Men run, Brian Michael Bendis brought back the original five X-Men.
It was fun for like three issues.
And then that was like 6 or 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
And they're still around. They're still being used. They still have multiple spin-off titles. There are two versions of most X-Heroes in the Marvel Universe at the moment. And this is the event that finally sends them to the grave.
Really?
Or back to their... No, I mean, there's a lot of death in this book.
Okay.
Do you want to know who dies?
Yes, please.
Okay, spoilers for the Extermination event, but I'm just going to give you a spoiler for your life.
Yeah.
If you care about X-Men dying...
have some problems.
Not problems, just like it's a big world out there. X-Men die every second.
Every single day.
And then they come back the next day.
And X-Men dies.
So we're going to go into some spoilers. In this book, the first death is the Bloodstorm, the alternate version of Aurora, who's been dating Cyclops, Cyclops.
Poor old vampire teen Storm.
Yep, she gets a stake through the heart and dies.
Classic.
And then, after he tries to save Bobby, aka Iceman, Cable is killed.
But by young Cable? Last page.
By a young version of himself. And Bobby Iceman is MIA. He actually is seen at the end of this issue in like a stasis chamber, which I imagine Cable is using to send him back in time.
Well, good job, Cable. It's about fucking time.
So on one hand, this series looks like it's going to send all of the old X-Men back into a time or to a grave. And also it's going to make Cable sexy now.
Yes, please.
So yeah.
What do you mean make Cable sexy?
Sorry, young. Make Cable young.
I've flicked through this to see if I could be fucked reading it. And it turns out I couldn't. And I saw the one panel where Jean Grey, they were like, Cable died. And Jean Grey was like, my son. Jean Grey, you've literally never been a mother to Cable. Chill out.
Okay, Mom, settle down. I thought this was like dumb but fun, and Ed Brisson like matched all the like the. It was, you know, it's a dumb X-Men event. If you're in the right mood for it, this scratched all the right boxes, I believe, as the saying goes.
God, awful. Yeah, it's a editorial nightmare to try and get some shit done in the X-Men universe.
Very true. Speaking of X-Men,
speaking of awful X-Men shit.
Oh no!
So I read Astonishing X-Men Annual Number 1, written by Matt Rosenberg, up by Trevor Foreman. So I was like, yes, please. And the art's great. And it involves the sort of, like, again, the semi-original X-Men's, like, Beast, Jean Grey, Angel, Iceman.
Okay. But yeah, the older versions of them.
Just getting some dinner. Yeah, the main ones, the regular ones, not the time travel young ones, the regular ones, the back from the dead ones. Anyway, so they're having dinner, and then they're interrupted by weird new young sexy with hair Professor X, who seems like a fucking bad guy for sure. I don't trust him one bit, mate. And then he's like, come to my weird massive mansion that I just live in for some reason, and to this weird town where everyone's brainwashed, and then everyone dies and it sucks. Sorry, that was a bad review, but it's not good, guys. And I don't know what they're doing with the X-Men universe still. Like, good, Jean Grey's back. Good, Beast. That's a good team, but I don't like this.
I like X-Men
Sinister
Red.
Sinister young... Yeah. X-Men Red's pretty good. But it's just a bit... It's just a bit nothing. The only thing that I got out of this was... Trevor Foreman's good. Trevor Foreman can draw the fuck out of a Beast.
Yeah, I really like it. Normally, I don't like his faces, but I like his faces in this issue.
Yeah, he really nails Beast in this. And ooh, also...
That sounds hot.
Yes, please. I wish Marvel would make some of the funny t-shirts that people wear in their comics, because Bobby is wearing a t-shirt all the way through this that just says, Hulk was right. About what? But I'm into it.
Because isn't that a play on the Cyclops was right?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Which is a play on Magneto was right.
Great.
I want all of those t-shirts, except for the Cyclops was right, because Cyclops was always wrong.
So that is Astonishing X-Men Annual Number 1. Are you going to continue reading the series? Or
No.
Yes, I'm going to call it. She is.
Yeah, probably. Because I pick it up anyway for Nate, because he still reads all of the X-Men books.
Can you just let me know, canonically, what is Nate?
What do you mean?
Lovely.
Oh, yeah, he's lovely. Sorry.
Lovely and a boyfriend.
Lovely and my boyfriend.
Star Wars had a new book through Marvel this week. It was a one-shot about Woody Harrelson's character in the... I almost said Star Wars Lobo, but Star Wars Solo. The Han Solo movie.
I thought I'd watched all of the Star Wars movies because I just watched The Last Jedi.
What'd you think?
Too long. I liked all the weird sexually tense bits between Kylo Ren and Rey.
Oh, that was easily the highlight for me.
Easily the best bit. Just that. Everything else could go.
When they like force time. Like,
yep.
When they're doing the chatting.
Yes,
yeah, that's
please.
The best.
That's my favorite bit.
Anyway, Star Wars Beckett is the name of this one shot. It's written by Jerry Duggan. I was going to give it a pass, and I'm like, Jerry Duggan's pretty good. Well, let's see how this is. And it is like a mission that Tobias Beckett and his team of Val and Rio Durant, who was the little monkey that was voiced by the dude who directed Iron Man.
Jon Favreau?
That's the one.
There you go. Happy.
Happy, that's it.
I know him.
So this is like a... It's cut into three chapters, and it's like just like a heist going wrong, but then going right at the end. And in each chapter is drawn by different artists. We have Edgar Salazar.
Well, that sounds annoying.
Well, yeah, only because Mark Laming is the artist in the middle, and his work is far and away the best.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
And then either side, you have Edgar Salazar and Will Sliney. Great name.
Good name.
Colors by Jordan Boyd the whole way through. But yeah, I mean, Mark Laming's art is by far the highlight of this issue. The story is fine. It's just a pretty inoffensive space heist. Featuring this character that I was fine with, I guess, in a movie that I didn't think was that fine.
You know what's a really good movie that's actually based on a graphic novel that everyone should see? Death of Stalin.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Oh, man. Good.
Good stuff. Have you read the graphic novel?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What's better?
Probably the movie.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, I know.
Very rare instance.
Yeah.
Well, you know what was a movie and is now a comic?
I didn't read this.
Oh, man, you should have read this. This is actually pretty good.
Okay, all right.
Dark Horse this week published The Terminator, Sector War. It's written by Brian Wood with Jeff Stokely on art. Fucking hell, Jeff Stokely. I don't know what he does as an artist. Before this, I should look it up. But his art is so good. It's just not what I expected from a kind of, you know, like a franchised comic. It's way kind of...
It's a bit cartoony.
Yeah, it's really, really cartoony, but by way of like, I guess like a, you know, I mean, he's definitely at home on a Dark Horse book, but, you know, it's a Terminator book. And so basically this is set in New York, 1984. And we meet a police officer working in the South Bronx 39th Precinct. And she comes face to face with a Terminator who's come to kill her because she is pregnant with someone who is responsible for fucking the world up in the future. You know how Terminator movies go.
Yeah.
You just watched T2, right?
Yeah.
Just last week?
Loved it.
Loved it?
Good movie.
This was just a no bullshit.
Someone's pregnant.
Terminator. Well, she's pregnant. But she finds out she's pregnant because the Terminator says, you're carrying the man I need to kill, so therefore you need to die.
Oh, fuck. That's a fucked up way to find out you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Also, way to ruin the gender reveal party, bro.
This was really fun. Like, it was kind of like, you know, by the numbers, like a very tough girl being chased by a fucking Terminator.
Hell yeah.
But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Absolutely. And I really enjoyed this. I'll definitely be reading all of it. It's good to read. It's good to experience new Terminator-based content that isn't terrible.
Terrible, yeah. Are they doing more Terminator movies?
They did. The most recent one was the one where James Cameron's like, hey, this one's actually pretty good. And it was not good at all. So,
Why would you ever listen to James Cameron?
Highly recommend this. I know a lot of people are massive fans of Terminator, the series, the movies, like at least the first two.
Just the robots.
Yeah, totally. And the arcade game. Great arcade game.
Yeah.
This is like on the level of some of the better Aliens comics that we've gotten from Dark Horse over the years.
Cool.
Give this one a shot. The Terminator Sector War out now through Dark Horse. Probably my favorite number one this week, maybe.
Amazing.
Finally, from Aftershock Comics, who gave us that excellent book last week about Lebanese crime and sandwich fingers. Mm. side note, I put out a recipe through a new website last week called ABC Life, and it was sandwich fingers.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. But is that a recipe? Not real sandwiches. It was. It was a recipe. Did I say recipe?
Yeah, sorry, but just sandwiches.
Oh, no. So it's like grilled cheese, like sandwich fingers.
Oh, like what you made it.
By my birthday this year.
Yeah, that was when delicious.
Actually, the story is like when you walk into a house, there's no better smell than like burnt butter, and toasting bread, and melted cheese.
You're right.
You do that. You just grill like a ton, like a whole loaf's worth of grilled cheese sandwiches, depending on how many people are coming over. I think I did 3 loaves.
Delicious.
And then I made a big thing of jalapeno cream, which is like sour cream, jalapeno, avocado, lime, and then you dunk them in that.
Guys, if you ever get an invite to Eleven's party, you gotta go.
There ain't no party like a Lev Dog party.
Because you're gonna leave full.
Aftershock Comics this week gave us a one called Volition.
Okay, did I miss out on this?
I gave it a shot because I really loved that one last week, the name of which escapes me. But this is written by Ryan Parrott. It's art by Omar Francia, which is very kind of like kind of painterly, but also digitally art. Yeah, I can't put my finger
like
on it.
Like 2008-ish.
It's like weird, uncanny valley between the two of those things.
I don't like that.
It's a like a future kind of cyberpunk story in which people make robots, the kind of robot uprising that everyone is expecting to happen doesn't happen, and robots just like, you know, integrate themselves into society. And this is like a kind of a book about them trying to find out secrets that are hidden within the minds of some certain robots. I've definitely made this story far too simple and missed the important part of it. I liked parts of this book, and maybe don't need to read any more of it. Aftershock is a cool little publisher, though. I like giving their issues a shot. Totally. But if you like a cyberpunk book, the cover art is way better than the art that we saw inside.
Yeah, I got a different cover. And I was like, I don't care about robos.
Oh, this is cover B. So you got the cover by the actual artist.
Yeah.
I got one by Chris Evanhui.
Good name.
Good shit. Cool.
Great.
That's it for First Things First. Now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Image, Marvel, or DC. Siobhan's lost the dice. No, she hasn't. She's found it. It was in her nose. And now that she's unblocked it, she's not sick anymore. So I'm going to roll the dice. And first, I'm going to talk about Image books. Then we're going to talk about Marvel books and then DC. Huge Image Week this week, with a lot of our favorite series coming out. If you want to talk about any of these favorite series and other comics, we have a Facebook group in which you can join us and discuss comics nonstop over there at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast.
Yes, please.
There's thousands of us. Come join the fray. Some fun new posters there that have really done some cool posts lately. I'm enjoying it.
Absolutely.
It's a fun place to be. So, should we go from most exciting to least exciting, or should I just pick at random?
Just go random.
I'm going to pick my favorite one straight away.
Fucking hell, I can't believe that's your favorite. Like, I can, but I can't.
At all of these?
I mean, just so full on.
Oh, right. Okay, sure. All right. So, the first issue that I'm going to talk about is issue number 6 of Ice Cream Man, which is a series that we love. It's a horror book, which is understandably full on for sure. Written by W.L. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Marazzo, colors by Chris O'Halloran.
Love Martin Marazzo.
Yeah, so much. He's one of my favorites.
So fucking good.
In the runner for best artist of the year, I think, in our awards. This issue was called Strange Neapolitan. And as you know, Ice Cream Man is a horror anthology series. Every week, the Ice Cream Man gives a new character an ice cream, and then some horrible shit
happens to that character.
And so in this issue, a teenage boy, he's a young man. He approaches the ice cream truck and holds out three fingers and is given a triple scoop of chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, affectionately known as Neapolitan. As he walks away from the ice cream truck, the panels split into three, each represented by a color, pink, yellow, or brown, a different flavor of the ice cream. And we see different branches of what might happen in his life. One of them, he meets the girl of his dreams. Another, he finds a stray dog with a broken paw. And the other he just he gets to the chocolate part, and the chocolate part is like full of worms. And then a bird ends up hatching out of him.
Yeah. Just real fucking core sort of horror, body horror shit.
Completely dialogue free for the entirety of this issue. A silent issue in which we see just like everyone that seems to be, all of his lives that seem, the life that seems to be the best suddenly goes the worst. And there's these horrific situations happening. Like the one where he finds the dog is probably the least bad. But
yeah, the one where he finds the dog is the only one where it's kind of okay, right? That turns out fine.
Well, sure, if you consider that the fact that he left his entire life to live alone in an abandoned shack with a dog.
That seems nice. I'm into that. That seems like a happy ending, right?
Yeah, sure.
Compared to the other two where his baby dies and then his wife drinks herself into a stupor every single night. And the other one where a bird hatches out of him.
Yeah, and then the issue ends on just the panel, just the caption, one way or another.
Yeah. Look, death comes for us all, right?
Yeah.
Am I right, friends?
Totally.
So good. I read this in a fucking horrified stupor.
It's probably the best way to read this book.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the most interesting and weird and cool books Image is publishing right now. And they publish a lot of weird, interesting, and cool books.
I love this creative team. I'm just so excited to see whatever they do together next.
Yeah.
I think they work so well together and they're really trying different shit.
Yeah, and if you like horror comics that are like extremely left of center, this is absolutely a book you should be reading.
And ones that'll really like stick with you and make you feel sad for like weeks.
Cool. That's Ice Cream Man, issue number 6.
Like.
Probably my favorite issue this week, even though it was extremely full on. I think as far as like a concept, it's just
great.
It just really ran with it and did everything that I hoped it would do. Let's move over now to issue number 5 of Skyward, which is a book in which Earth's gravity is turned off. And everyone floats to the sky. And the new society, people that wear magnet shoes to stay on the ground.
And storms are collected in one big fucking massive raindrop.
It's a lot of really, really cool ideas presented in a great way. It's written by Joe Henderson with art by Lee Garbett and colors by Antonio Fabella. In this issue, a whole bunch of shit happens really quickly that I could not believe happened. And we deal with the death of a pretty major character. In a way that is going to affect the main character's life for the rest of this comic.
Yes, I was very sad about that.
Yeah, me too.
Expecting it.
Especially because, it seemed like they were finally going to partner up and then...
Absolutely.
I guess not. This is a cool series, though. I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to get a little break from the series. I don't know why I feel like that. This feels like the end of book one, you know?
That definitely felt like the end of the first arc. And now we're going to get to see, like, the world open up a bit.
Yeah.
But really, like, yeah, just clever.
Fun sci-fi.
Yeah.
With a great main character.
Absolutely.
Cool stuff. The Wicked and the Divine this week had issue number 38, the final, second to last issue of this second to last arc.
Oh, okay.
This is on its way out. Man, this series needs to end just so I can go back to the beginning of this series and read it and try and figure out every single thing that's happening, because there's a lot going on with a lot of different characters, yeah. A lot of different past and past versions of the characters and
okay.
things repeating in history. But a lot of this dealt with the reveal that one of the characters is pregnant and her revealing that to other characters in the series and what that means for the future of this insane characters. It's our insane story involving pop stars becoming gods throughout history.
Cool.
It's a really, really great series. I'm also excited for it to finish so you can binge it all.
Yeah. And I'm also excited so that Jamie McKelvey can do some other projects.
Yeah, totally. But it's written by Karen Gillan and Jamie McKelvey. It's a good series and I think it's going to have a pretty epic finale. Flavor this week, we got issue number 4 written by Joseph Keating with art by Wook Jin Clark and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. This is the really cool book about a world in which you have to have a license to cook and there are extreme Colosseum mm-hmm. battles of iron chefery going down. And this book has been relatively straightforward. I would even consider it a great one to give to a younger reader.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very a teen. But fucking hell, this issue had a bunch of moments that either jumped forward in time or didn't explain how certain characters got out of situations. Unless copy was missing books or something like that. But at one point, the main character is about to be she's imprisoned. And then suddenly she's back at home on the couch. Is that your middle page? Turn to your middle page. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah.
Were you lost in that part? It's
just as they say.
Go home. And then
the child, home. Send
okay.
her home.
Okay, sure. All right. Yeah. I guess I wasn't too clear on who that person who sends her home is, so I maybe wanted a bit more clarity there. And then at the end, there's a reveal.
I think it's the other dude's mum.
Oh, okay, cool.
So they have history.
I was like,
I love
is that
serious? So I've been pouring over every fucking panel.
I may have read it very late last night, but I was like, oh, is that a future version of the main character? And that's just not what I was expecting from the series. So maybe that's why I still really enjoyed it. Clearly,
that explains why it was much more confusing for you.
Yeah, totally.
Why is there future versions now? Is this fucking X-Men?
You know what? This is on me. I'm going to reread this issue tonight.
Good call. It's so gorgeous. I really, really love this book. And the back matter is always so fun. You get a recipe for crepes in the back of this.
Yeah, totally.
Lovely.
Almost as good as a recipe for grilled cheese sandwich fingers.
Look, delicious.
The jury's out. Gideon Falls, another horror book through Image, written by Jeff Lemire, Andrea Sorrentino, and Dave Stewart, gave us the final issue of the first arc of this great series.
I love this book. God, I love this book.
Do you want to give a little summary? Or a vague intro to the story.
There's a spooky barn.
Great stuff.
There's a priest who was fucking a lady, and so he's not. Oh God, you know what? I keep being like, I've got to stop swearing on the podcast, just in case children listen.
No, but who cares about children? Why?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Why do children listen to a podcast? That's not what children should do. Children should be outside playing Fortnite.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is like, I can't explain it. There's a barn.
There's a barn that exists in the minds of various people in this community. And people that don't see it think these people are crazy.
Yes, and it's like a terrible barn.
Spooky. In which disgusting acts of depravity happen and people are killed.
Yeah.
And
one of our main characters is a slightly disgraced priest who's been moved to a new location.
I believe he was fucking a lady.
He was fucking a lady, which, if you know priests, that's not allowed. made myself laugh. and then our other main character is this kid who I think he might be the secret son or like the missing brother of that they're searching for.
Okay.
I assume.
Right, sure.
But he's like, I'm a mental patient and I can't remember anything except for this barn that's always in my mind.
Siobhan's quoting the comic verbatim. So, yeah.
And he's always collecting pieces of the barn. And now his psychiatrist has started seeing the barn as well. So she's like, oh shit.
But yeah,
we gotta build a barn.
Those two storylines haven't crossed exactly yet.
No. But man, Sorrentino is like killing it.
Yeah, he goes for
he's
broke
so good
in terms of like panel structure and layout in this.
There's really intricate line work. It's very unsettling.
I love when the priest has a vision of Jesus.
Yes, please.
In this, and Jesus is like really rude to him.
Yes, please.
Yeah, this is a really, really cool book, and it's unlike anything else Lemire has done in the past.
Yeah.
It's definitely my favorite thing Sorrentino has done too.
Yeah, and I love Jeff Lemire playing around with like themes of like Catholicism and guilt and
yep.
all small towns.
Those two
things.
You don't need to say like Catholicism and guilt is two separate things.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand. Yeah.
But it's great. It's really good. I really look forward to it. And then I put it down. I'm like, oh, it's so spooky. I love it. Every single time.
So it's Gideon Falls, issue number 6. The first trade will be out very soon. I highly recommend you pick it up.
Really highly recommend.
Get spooked, everybody.
Absolutely.
Did you read The Weatherman, issue number 3?
I couldn't remember what happened in the last issue, and I was like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm too sick for this.
There were a couple moments in this issue, which is written by Jody LaHoop, with
good
art by Nathan Fox. I really love Nathan Fox's art, and colors by Dave Stewart. There were a few moments in this issue where I was like, wait, who's that again? What are they doing? What's going on? But yeah, basically, like, after a half of the world is killed due to an apocalyptic event that is the cause of one person. That person who brought this death upon the world has like kind of reinvented it, like basically set up a new identity for himself, but his new identity isn't aware that he was a terrorist in the past.
Yeah, right.
So he's just thinks he's like this, you know, goofy weatherman. And so now he's the most wanted person on the world, but he doesn't have any memory of committing these awful crimes in the past. It's a fun concept, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in this future world. In this issue, the weatherman basically becomes a full-on action hero and drives them out of danger. There's some heavy themes in this alongside all of the kind of goofy comedy that I don't think always work, but the story is interesting and pretty different, and I'm definitely going to keep reading it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, The Weatherman. Pretty interesting. Finally for me, I read Manifest Destiny, which is issue 36 this week, written by Chris Dingus and Matthew Roberts, with art by Tony Akins and Owen Gianni. Did I fuck that up? Sorry, Matthew Roberts is the penciler, Tony Akins is the inker. So written by Chris Dingus. Manifest Destiny is about Lewis and Clark traveling from one side of America to the other.
Good job for not calling him Burke and Wills.
I don't know who in their right mind would ever do that 20 episodes in a row. But yeah, Manifest Destiny, you know, that they encounter awful monsters and horrible things. So it's like a kind of fantastical take on real historical events. And in this one, Lewis and Clark dealt with an uprising, a coup against them. And this shows how they dealt with it and managed to get the upper hand on those who rose against them. And it's pretty interesting and very different to how this series began.
Mm.
And there's a pretty amazing moment for one of the black characters in the in the series.
Hmm.
Yeah. Good issue.
Cool.
The final issue of this arc too. I'm looking forward to it being a monster book again, though. It's kind of why I picked it up in the first place.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really been... I mean, obviously, there's no greater monster than Man-Shaman.
Oh, absolutely. I say that all the time.
But I want some fun monsters.
Yeah, you're not really looking for social commentary from your, like, book about past monsters.
Exactly. Well, the Image books did you read?
I read Analogue, issue 5, by Jerry Duggan. Well, they don't put their first names. Duggan, O'Sullivan, Spicer, Sabino, Latour. Variant cover. And this is the future where either you have no internet or everything you do is broadcast on the internet at all times. So you have to make that choice.
The internet was made public
yes.
by our main character.
And the main character, he's like a... He is a guy who moves information securely. So, like, actual printed physical information.
Handwritten information.
He will move
suitcase
it
to suitcase.
From place to place. And this seems to be... I sort of lose track really quickly at what is actually happening in this book, but I like it.
Yeah, I really like it too. I'm definitely going to read this one in trade because
yeah.
I made the decision last issue. I was like, I like it. I just can't remember anything.
Totally. It has a sort of... Like, if I was going to make a movie about this, it would be like Harrison Ford in the 80s.
What about Colin Farrell in the 80s?
Yes, please.
Give him more good roles, Hollywood.
I love Colin Farrell. Yeah. But anyway, it's good. It's like a weird, gritty sort of future crime thing, but also quite funny at times. And I like it. It's good. It's silly. Jerry Duggan writes good dialogue and good action sequences. And the new bad guy is, like, pretty scary. So I like it.
Awesome.
And then I also read... Issue 3 of Proxima Centauri by Farrell Dalrymple. This is the latest, like, crazy out there sci-fi book.
Freaky deaky.
With a jerky teenage protagonist having weird adventures in this semi-magical, sci-fi future world with... his friend's dog, D-H-O-G, who's a small dog with horns,
uh-huh.
who can talk, and a girl who appears to be a ghost, and they just ride bikes around and get into mischief, and there's a whole bit where he teaches an ancient being the game. Pretty funny. And so there's lots of, like, little close-ups of hands, etc. And then there's, like, these little spooky blue guys at the end who appear to be a new bad guy who are taking over. Anyway, it's really great. There's very few... books with protagonists as, like, unappealing as this. This kid just rides around on his bike being like, I'm fucking rad. I love that. And I love Dalrymple's art. Super, like, sketchbooky with really watercolory colors.
Is this his first, like, monthly book?
No, he's done lots of monthly books
before. He's done monthly, like, our show.
But they're just so weird. It's hard to follow what's going on, but I just... It's one of those ones that I think you just let it wash over you. Go along with the ride.
Embrace
it's
the
good
weirdness.
Fun.
So what now that is it for Massive Image Week.
Yes.
And we move over to Marvel for three. I got three. How many?
Yeah,
you got?
Same.
Three. So I've got different ones. A couple of different ones. I got Infinity Wars 2 to start with. Another book written by Jerry Duggan. His third book this week.
Good lord.
Busy
take a break.
Boy. With art by Mike Diodato, whose art annoyed me multiple times through this. After you made jokes about his ridiculous extra squares in the panels, I just couldn't stop seeing them.
Yeah, I know. I just I don't mind it as long as it's like for a purpose to like lead the eye somewhere, but it just doesn't seem to have a purpose.
It just is like, hey, I like doing grids.
Yeah, you know what looks cool? Grids. You know, kids love grids.
Kids love grids these days. I'm a real grid kid. Frank Martin did colors on this one. We see more of this new Gamora who is carrying around the head of Thanos.
Yes, please.
And wielding a big purple sword.
Weak, though, they took back the Peter Quill being stabbed through his chest.
Yeah, so Star-Lord we thought was going to die, but using the Time Stone, Doctor Strange reverses that from happening. We see basically Gamora using... all the different stones in a fun way that, like, you know, usually we just see them wielding like the grand total of all the stones together in the gauntlet and just, you know, having a big laser power or whatever.
Mm.
But it was fun seeing her use each stone individually,
mm-hmm.
and she like tricks everybody into thinking a different reality in which they won happened with the reality stone and stuff like that. So basically Gamora is kind of like the main
Gamora's Thanos now.
Yeah, Gamora's Thanos now. And which means we look forward to seeing her try and bone a skeleton with boobs.
Yes, please. Always.
We see her kind of return to find the part of herself that's stuck in the Soul Stone. And then she meets Loki there. And I guess they're going to team up, maybe?
Maybe.
That's a fun little pairing, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be interested to see if anyone's reading this book who hadn't read, like, Jerry Duggan's Guardians run and then, like, also all of the tie-ins to this. Like, would it make any sense?
Yeah, let us know. Let us know if you make any sense of this book.
Because I barely can.
The recap paragraph is like, surprisingly light considering how much has happened in the lead up to this. Anyway, it's still fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's dumb and fun.
Speaking of Thanos wanting to bone a skeleton.
Thanos showed up in Thor issue number 4 this week, in which he denies the hand of marriage from Hela.
Mm-hmm.
Denies Hela's hand in marriage, I believe is a better way to say that.
Oh.
Who could say? Right, sure. this is written by Jason Aaron with art by Mike Del Mondo and Marco D'Alfonso on color assists. It's basically the end of this opening arc to the latest run of Jason Aaron's Thor run. It's them escaping from hell. Some fun things happened throughout this arc that I didn't appreciate until the very end of this, when you realize that from this little journey, we've got the return of Tyr.
Mm-hmm.
Tyr's gone to heaven. And who's returning now? Is it Baldur? No, not...
One of the others.
One of the others. Who the fuck
knows? Maybe Baldur.
A whole bunch of people are back.
Yep.
Boulder is so Boulder is back. Boulder is back with the Land of the Living.
Yeah, Boulder and Lady Brunhild. Yes, yep, please.
Brunhild is back too. She's out of Valhalla and back on Earth now. Loki takes something from Thor.
Yes,
and we don't know what
it is. And Thor lives on a boat. That's fun.
Yeah,
Thor living on a boat.
The next issue is going to be featuring Christian Ward on art, and is going to be a jump forward to the future. Which seems like it's going to be a bunch of fun.
Yes, please.
Like this. I don't love it, and I've loved almost every issue of this run before this current run.
That I think I'm enjoying this in terms of just like a pure sort of Kirby / Simonson style Asgardian shenanigans. You know,
sure.
The Jane Foster stuff was much more character driven.
Yep.
And I started to get really, like, bored with that towards the end. And so I'm a bit more, I like this all kind of, like, oh, and then Loki pretends to kill Thor so that he can go to Valhalla and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I like that. Loki, he still writes Loki really well.
I think he gets the relationship between Thor and Loki so fucking spot on.
This definitely feels like a Simonson-esque Thor in a way that none of his other run has before this.
I like it. It feels very consequence-free.
Even though they're in hell and then heaven and then back on Earth.
Love it.
Great fun. So we read an issue each that the other one did not. You can do yours first.
So I read Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, issue 308 by Chip Zdarsky. And I read it because it has art by Chris Pacello.
Yeah.
Who I love.
Previously did some excellent work on, he was tweeting that this is like the second Sandman story he's done in the past.
Yeah. This is a good Sandman story, guys. And fucking reading the recap page of this, I swear I've only dropped off this book like last couple of issues. And I have no idea what's happened in the meantime. But that is the most insane recap page I've ever seen. But you don't need it, because this is just a pure it opens on Sandman walking through New York City as he's like falling apart. Like, he's slowly turning into sand and he can't keep himself together, and he's reminiscing about all the fights that he's had with Spidey and all the things in his life that he's done that's a waste, and why did he do that, and he's wasted his life and all that stuff. And then J. Jonah Jameson, who's now like Spider-Man's tip guy, calls him up to be like, Sandman's back in New York, you gotta go bust him, Spidey. And so Spidey goes and finds him, but instead of busting him, he's like, oh, he's in hospital. And so Spider-Man is like, look, it seems like it's terminal. Where's your favorite place in the city? And so he takes him to the beach, and they sit on the beach while Sandman slowly falls apart. But what is actually happening? Because he seems to be turning into some kind of crystal man.
Whoa.
Cool.
So it's going to be to be continued?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a 2-3 issue arc.
Cool.
But good fun. I would say this is worthwhile to jump onto. This is the kind of shit that Chip Zdarsky is great at. extreme melancholy slash good jokes.
Yeah, awesome.
Love it.
Yeah.
Really great issue. Plus, Bocello is like an all-time great.
Yeah, one of the best artists that still does work at Marvel for sure.
And he's so good on Spidey. He understands like the physicality of Spidey so well.
That would be an interesting podcast to do in the future. Artists who understand the physicality of Spidey.
Yeah.
What to do, what not to do.
Yes.
You seem to be very passionate about the subject.
I am. You know what I don't like? I don't like when they have him coming at the camera taint first. You know what I mean? I just find it very aggressive.
Yes, definitely. Hey, speaking of taint first.
Yes, please. Hey, yeah, absolutely.
I read the third issue of Tony Stark Iron Man by Dan Slott, Valeria Skitty, and Edgar Delgado, which features a taint first Iron Man for some reason, somehow thrusting one leg away. I think he's falling backwards. But look, his thrusters are on that way. How does that work?
I don't know.
Does Iron Man have a taint thruster?
Good point.
Also, great episode name.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that like Astro Boy? Astro Boy has the...
He's a taint thruster?
In his, oh, he's got guns
a little
in his butt.
One. Yeah, little butt guns. Yeah.
Astro Boy.
Yeah, so does Iron Man have a taint thruster? I just got to remember.
Does Iron Man have a taint thruster?
I'm not going to listen back to this fucking mess.
Absolutely not.
I said I was going to stop reading this, but something about...
It's a cool cover. Taint.
I like Valeria Skitty a lot. And I've liked a lot of Dan Slott stuff in the past. And I was like, no, I don't accept that his Iron Man run is just not going to be good from those first two issues. I'm going to give this one another shot. And I really liked this issue. Basically, he is creating a virtual world that anyone can live in. But he wants to do some testing so that all of the AI-driven NPCs and non-playable characters aren't distinguishable from humans that are also in that virtual world.
Why? Why is that good? Why would that be good to do?
Siobhan,
I get so angry about AI. Stop doing it. Why are we doing it?
Machine Man is dating one of Tony Stark's AI employees.
Oh, God, I just want to like collapse onto the floor. That makes me feel so exhausted.
It's really fun.
Don't understand in myself why some robots I'm like yes and other robots I'm like no, and I have like a really violent reaction to them.
So this is like fun. It kind of like riffs on like Westworld Machine Man kind of gets himself into the simulation and ruins it for everybody. And
what do you mean by gets himself into the simulation? He's dating the simulation.
Oh no, as in like the...
I was trying to make a dirty joke. Oh, okay. It's fine. Continue.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to lie to a pile. I'm going to lie on the floor.
I hate myself.
But yeah, it's just fun seeing him kind of like take down all these different people who are kind of in all these fun different fantasy worlds. In the end, Tony Stark saves the day as Doctor Strange in this different reality. And it's fun. And they are like, even though each of these issues have been a one shot, they are building towards something a bit bigger. It looks like this has a lot to do with AI, which if you're not a fan of that, I would avoid a lot. I guess it's going to be like the main kind of drive of this.
When will you learn your lesson, Tony Stark? Is he making out with Wasp on the cover?
It looks like it's the next issue. Well, I'll let you know because I'm definitely going to read the next issue.
You could do so much better, Janet.
Maybe it's because haven't they made out in the past? Maybe it's just like a photo of the past.
Maybe.
Who knows? That's Marvel. And now we're going to talk about DC, finally. We're going to start with issue 53 of Batman, the second last issue of the Cold Day storyline, in which Bruce Wayne testifies against Batman on a case in which they're trying to find Mr. Freeze guilty of killing people.
And I'm back on thinking this sucks.
There's a lot of...
soul-searching dialogue.
Well, when the issue ended on a quote from the Book of Job,
yes.
I was like, man,
yes.
Siobhan is going to hate Fuck. This.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad you noticed. Christ almighty, exactly. That's so heavy.
Exactly.
Bruce Wayne is Job? Shut up.
Written by Tom King, obviously.
Obviously.
Art by Lee Weeks and Elizabeth Breitweiser. They're both such a good combo.
So
brilliant art on this, which features very little action, but a lot of Bruce Wayne reflecting on that he viewed Batman as a god. It is clever that all the jury is thinking that he's just talking as a Gotham resident who viewed the Batman as a god that was going to save Gotham, but really he's talking about the fact that he used Batman
he was
to escape.
God.
To God. Well, I don't know, like, you know, that, that like the costume elevated him above crime and others. I totally get why you hate this, and there are moments like it's such a fine line. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm loving this. This is a fun little analogy to make.
Totally.
But he always pushes it just that step too far, and you're like, his hands, they're heavy hands that he has.
I just think he needs a firmer editor. Maybe they're afraid of him because he was CIA
inject,
and he threatens them.
Wow.
That's a weird thing to accuse him of. I'm sorry. That's not true.
Inject your hands with helium, Tom King.
Yes, please.
They'll be a little bit lighter, and you can do these big sweeping statements without beating people over the head with the intricacies of them.
I literally wasn't. I saw the little Job quote at the bottom and I went, fuck you. But I like the classic costume.
Yeah.
Back in
the classic costume.
Yes, please.
It looks incredible, drawn by Lee Weeks.
Lovely Weeks. He's lovely Weeks.
So good. I look forward to seeing what Lee Weeks does after this kind of like Renaissance Batman period he's had. Because he'd be a pretty older dude, I think. So let's give him something good, world. Yes, Injustice 2, written by Tom Taylor.
God, Nate picked up all the wrong things for me.
Still continuing to be my favorite DC book, bar none, written by Tom Taylor with art by, is it Nathan Redondo? It's a great name.
It's a good name.
The credits are somewhere in this issue. Features a little...
I like the look of that.
There's a little preview at the back of some DC issues this week for the next book by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo, who gave us the Joker, like gritty Joker graphic novel a few years ago.
Also the Luther one, which I think is way better.
Yeah. I was going to say it's nowhere near as good, but then I...
Oh, no way. Yeah. Fair enough.
I think I read it expecting it to be as kind of like gritty and dumb. Yeah. But it was a lot of him like looking up, and I said, didn't like the... What does he make to fight Superman in that?
I can't remember.
I need to reread it. Over
I
there.
Mostly just remember like I thought it was the best example of Luther being like, I'm the good guy. Guys, why can't you see that?
Yeah.
I thought that was good.
For sure.
Anyway, they're doing a very gritty, scary Batman book and it looks cool.
Because it's narrated by John Constantine.
Yes, please.
Good fun. Who famously, Brian Azzarello, did a small amount of the Hellblazer run. A 12-issue Hellblazer run. Mm. In which he just did not understand the character at all. Mm. So I wonder, now that he's revisiting him, it's barely a Hellblazer book when he does it. There's some cool arcs during it, but his Hellblazer is just like this fucking psychopath.
Cool.
It's bizarre. Bruno Redondo is the penciler on this, with inks by Juan Albarrán and colors by Gabe Eltabe. This is all in space now. It's a big battle of the Red Lanterns, led by Starro, who have taken over the Guardians with Starro's mind control starfish. The Green Lanterns, what's left of them, are basically putting their faith in anyone they got. So we have help from Supergirl and Connor Kent, and they even make Lobo a Green Lantern. Lobo attacks, is it Atrocitus? Is that the Red Lantern?
Yep.
Attacks Atrocitus with a big green cock.
No,
seriously, he goes, that you dare attack Atrocitus with something so obscene. And
holy
he goes,
shit.
Then Lobo says,
oh my god, even that looks like veiny and gross. Yeah. Tom Taylor, how did you get away with that?
Damn straight I dare. Beware my power. Green Lantern's dick. It's like censored, but
that's so funny.
It's just censored enough. And then you cut to Hal and
imaginary Guy Gardner.
Laughing at it. And
that's really funny.
Yeah.
That's straight from the Gail Simone book of getting around censorship.
Yeah, and Guy Gardner's like, it was obscene, it was depraved, but it was effective. And then later on, when Supergirl what's that orange girl's name again?
Starfire.
Join the fray again.
I'm so offended when you don't know the names of all Teen Titans.
We have this blue one. I don't know what her name is.
The blue, Ganthet?
The blue Green Lantern. Say, is that...
She's one of the guys.
Did they make Lobo a lantern? And Supergirl says, yeah, I wouldn't look at anything he's creating if I were you. I mean, it's educational, but possibly mentally scarring. I don't know, it's just like really fun and stupid and like just a dick joke. I love a dick joke,
guys. Good job.
Yeah, so it's a big, big, dumb space fight in which the great Green Lanterns get the upper hand, just as a massive army led by Bizarro enters the fray. So it looks like we're going to stay in space for a while. I love this just fun, stupid celebration of all things DC. Except the D in DC stands for dicks.
Yes, please.
Deke comedy.
Good.
Thank you, Tom Taylor.
You know what I read, which is
I meant to read this, but
yeah.
I didn't.
So I read Batgirl issue 25, which was an extra-sized anniversary issue.
The worst kind of issue.
which has a whole bunch of creators on it, including someone called May Reed Scott, I think, probably pronounced. Don't know about that. And then also Paul Dini and a bunch of other people. Like, just there's too many creators. Yeah. Just not going to say
anything. So there are some celebratory short stories featuring the character, but do we also get a kind of bigger story from the new team taking over this run?
I don't know who the new team is.
Okay.
Do you know who it is? But yes, there is a story that is going to be the new direction, and it is like quite, which is written by, yeah, Married Scott and Paul Pelletier.
Yep, that's right.
Pencils. And it's quite like a bit of a horror book almost, like a bit of, it's sort of a bit more gory than I would expect from a...
The flavor of the month. Yeah, a little bit of disturbing horror.
But I like it. The new villain is called Grotesque.
Okay.
And he's like, my crimes are art or something. And so he like slashes people's throats and then makes art in their blood or whatever.
Okay. Fun.
Yeah, it's an idea normal. That seems to be fucking everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, sure.
But I like the art. It was good. It was silly. And there were some good fun little mini stories in here. The Paul Dini one about there's the Mad Hatter and the March Harriet or something. I think her name is. Anyway, March Harriet. And that was good fun. And there's a really sweet little romantic story about her and Nightwing, which was cute, written by Marguerite Bennett, with art by Dan Panosian, which was like gorgeous.
So a good little collection of stories?
Yeah, I liked it.
Cool. Sticking with it, you reckon?
Good celebration. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Batgirl, potentially in good hands, unless they're cutting your throat to make art.
Even that.
They should make just one page with using throat blood.
Yeah. Come on, guys.
Dedicate yourselves to the cause. The Wildstorm, issue number 16, came out this week, written by Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt. Pretty fun to be on the other side of, to be the other person watching my co-host struggle not to cough profusely on the mic. How does it feel to be in my usual seat?
It feels great.
Yeah. Warren Ellis, John Davis Hunt, and B. Bucciolato on this book, which is still good. Just still the very, very slow burn towards something.
Yeah, I love this issue. Also, Nate, the lovely Nate, looked up because we were like, who are all these fucking characters that this guy is tracking down? And they're the parents of Gen 13.
Oh, right.
Sure. Action sequences. I feel like the art just gets better and better.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I love, like, you know, I don't know much about the Wildstorm universe. I don't really know many of these characters, so I really like Warren Ellis' introduction to him.
Yeah, I think I would love it a lot more if I did know who all these characters were in to begin with.
Maybe.
Yeah, and it wouldn't feel like a long tease as much as it does sometimes.
But there's a bit at the end where she turns her hand into a gun.
That's pretty cool.
That's great.
Wish I could have that power.
Absolutely.
I'd turn my hand into a sandwich and eat it.
Nice.
And then pull it back out of my body. That no carbs.
Good. What?
That is it for DC. Now we move over to other publishers. I've got a small handful of books left. Do you want to talk about Aether?
Okay.
Dark Horse published Aether, issue number 4. Sorry, Aether the Copper Golems, the second in the Aether series by Matt Kent and David Rubin. This is a fun mix of fantasy and... Well, it's mostly just fantasy.
It's pretty much just fantasy, guys.
In which... our
It's a scientist trying to force science into a fantasy world, which is pretty funny to see.
In this arc, we have the scientist and his team of fantastical creatures trying to take down a bunch of copper golems, who are kind of like stomping around the world and causing havoc. They are searching for a portal, and when they get there, they find someone who is able to trap people in tails. Featuring themselves, and we get this great series of pages in which each character imagines themselves or is being told a tale of themselves as the hero of these differently themed comic books.
And I like this the new character of this sort of handsome adventuring Minotaur bro.
Yes,
like good at everything that Boone is bad at.
Yeah.
And they're like, he is impervious to being ensorcelled with the enchanted tales. And he goes, I live my fantasy every day of my life.
As he breathes out smoke from both nostrils and mouth.
Yes, please.
Green smoke. This is a fun series. One more issue to go, I think, of this arc. But it's been good.
Fun.
Not as good as the first first arc, but I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Also out through Dark Horse this week was Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, issue number 5 of 7, which was, this feel like it's been going on for a long time now.
Ah, but I love it. I know this is like my first sort of introduction to the Usagi Yojimbo world, but I'm enjoying this.
Did you read this story?
I did.
Oh, cool. Sweet. I didn't see it in your pile, so I was like, oh, she must have tapped out. I'm really enjoying it too. I think, you know, he's just the master of just a well-told tale where, you know, not that much happens over time, but it's still really enjoyable.
Yeah.
A mystery slowly unfurling. This involves basically those of the Christian faith making their way into feudal Japan and it being outlawed at the time. And of course, feudal Japan is inhabited by anthropomorphic animals led by a samurai bunny rabbit called Usagi. It's really, really good. It's definitely one of the few mysteries that he tells in this book where you can't see the ending coming a mile away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying it.
It's just like, it's just a delight to read.
His cartooning is incredible.
Yeah.
So the animals he draws are so, the expressions are so gleeful and excellent,
mm-hmm.
even when they're dying.
Yep. Love it.
That's Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, another great issue. And final issue for me, we got two Boom books.
We'll
leave Fence till last.
All right, I'll quickly mention. I read issue 4 of Coda by Simon Spurrier and Matthias Bergara. And this is Simon Spurrier's like most sort of... sorry, guys.
I know how it feels. I should be filling in for you. Filling the void.
Sort of European feeling, weird, intense sci-fi. And it's very hard to explain what's going on. But I do recommend it because the art's gorgeous. And
almost
I love...
would fit in like a heavy metal book.
Absolutely. I love Simon Spurrier's... like really dense worlds that he creates. I think that it's good fun. And he's obviously got a vast imagination. And I do rate this one.
Good.
Just can't tell you what's happening. You
know? Well, that was why I had to drop it. I was just like, I like the art a lot and there's some fun characters.
Oh, I don't know what's happening.
I can't remember any of it. So final book that we're going to talk about is the Boom Box book, Fence.
The best book of all.
C.S. Paquette, with art by Joanna the Mad and Joanna La Fuente on colors. What does she do? Colors. She does colors. And this is, of course, the excellent, excellent series about a group of beautiful boys who go to a fencing school and fence. And we are currently in an amazing arc in which each of the boys fence each other in order to maintain their position at the school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is just fucking wonderful issue to issue.
Absolutely.
I cannot believe that C.S. Paquette is relatively like early in her career because this is just an expertly paced a book where you just learn just enough about the characters and also the sport of fencing in each issue. And it's just told at such a rollicking pace where you're just so invested and excited to see more and more fencing and learn more about how you be good at fencing through the eyes of these different characters, plus all of the relationships between the characters when they're not fencing too, including the two main characters, Seiji and
Nicholas,
who I guess they're discovered at the end of this issue.
Fighting in the closet.
Yes. But I mean, this is such a...
What could that mean?
Gorgeous, sexy book that...
It relies heavily on like tropes and sort of situations from like yaoi and boy love manga and anime, which like Paquette is very upfront about. So there's sort of beats that you know she's going to hit at some point if you're familiar with the genre.
Which Siobhan definitely is.
I just, you know, not familiar as people would expect. But I just love it. It's so gorgeous and the art's so beautiful. I can't believe this is the first comic that Joanna the Mad has done in print. You know,
very, very true. Very true.
Because she's so talented and every character is slightly different and feels lived in. And it's so wonderfully like diverse and just the colors are luminous.
Yeah, I don't dislike one character in this. As soon as we see any character, I'm just like, yes, please, just give me the rest of the issue with this character. Oh, we're not with this one anymore? Okay, give me the rest of the issue with this character.
Yeah.
Like, I love this series so much. And like,
it's so wholesome.
I can't fathom a world in which everyone doesn't get something out of this book.
I know. I can't imagine everyone not loving this.
Yeah, so this is another one of my Christmas books, I think. Yeah. I'll give this a lot of people because it's just such a fun story.
Totally.
And it's about fucking fencing. Who gives a shit about fencing?
No
me,
one.
Me, apparently.
Now you. Now all of us.
So good. So yeah, that's it's good to end the episode on a book that we both loved.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a pretty easy pick. We're
always going to love Fence.
I have to pace myself. Speaking of good pacing, I never have good pacing because I always want to read it first because I'm so invested in the story. But I know that once I read it, every other book I'll be like, ah.
I wish this was Fence.
Yeah, exactly.
I just had 20 issues of Fence.
And when this arc is done, I'm going to do a reread of all the issues because I've just loved it so much.
Totally.
Cool. Well, I hope you've loved this episode of Serious Issues so much that you want to maybe kick us a couple bucks on that Patreon, get you on some more soup.
Guys, I'm so sick.
And of course, that's where you can find us, patreon.com/serious issues podcast. You want to support us? We love the support and you get some bonus material out of it, which is a win-win situation for all involved. If you want to find us elsewhere, again, there is the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast, or on Twitter @serious_issues. Or individually at Lev Dog or at Siobhan CBG.
That's me.
Next week, Siobhan, what have we got? I don't even
know.
I did. There it is. There's my order. We got something called Batman Kings of Fear, which is a new mini series about Batman and Scarecrow. There's a new Beasts of Burden one shot.
Okay.
You like that series?
Oh, I love Beasts of Burden.
Yeah. Wise Dogs is the name of that one shot. There is a second issue of that weird Robert Kirkman and Chris Thingo. Book Die, Die, Die.
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to continue with that one, maybe?
Yeah, I'll check it out.
But the one that I think we were both the most excited about is West Coast Avengers.
Who's doing that?
It's our girl who is doing Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah, Kelly Thompson.
Kelly Thompson's new book for Marvel.
I'm going to whisper for the rest of the podcast.
Is West Coast Avengers.
That's better.
There's a whole bunch of other ones. The Mega Man Master Mix series that I love so much gets its third issue. The awesome...
Is this like ASMR?
Is it? We do an end on the ASMR.
Yeah.
My voice, I'm not good at whispering. Do you know I'm not very good at whispering? I guess I am actually kind of good.
Yeah, it's fine. It's very weird.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Serious Issues. And we'll be back next week. And with more comics and more whispering. So, like we say every single week, be cool to each other. And stay out of the sun.
What?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I have a weird alter ego that only exists through whispering, and it's your fault you've unlocked him. He's the real bad guy. This is on you, Siobhan.
He seems very creepy.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.